Listen to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello and welcome to Shoot the Defence on FNX, brought to you by The Life of A. I'm your host, Delwyn. This edition is a World Cup profile special focusing on the current world champions, Germany. Now, joining me is German football contributor for Mail Online, Elf Freunde, the AFT news agency, and Tagesspiegel, Kit Holden. Kit, welcome to the show, mate. How you doing?
I'm very well. I'm very happy to be here.
It's an absolute pleasure, mate. Thanks for coming. I understand you're really busy with the World Cup, just days away. So I really appreciate you coming on.
No problem.
Great stuff. Well, mate, the biggest story from Germany was heavily reported in the UK was the exclusion of Leroy Sané from the Mannschaft squad. Now, rumours have been circulating that a blood test found Sané had performance-enhancing drugs in his system, which obviously is a big rumour. While others believe Jogi Löw doesn't believe the player isn't fully committed to the national team after deciding to have no surgery, which caused him to miss the Confederations Cup. Can you put those rumours to rest?
In a certain way, yes. I mean, the drugs thing, I think we'll go on the basis of innocence until proven guilty. And as far as the nose operation goes, I would say there's a half-truth in that, in the sense that I don't think it's all about the nose operation and missing the Confederations Cup. But I do think Sané perhaps doesn't enjoy the same kind of adulation and... respect. Well, I'd hesitate to say respect, but he's certainly not rated as an indispensable player in the way that you might expect him to be as a player of his talent. Löw, Germany, as we know, have a lot of a quality in attacking midfield, far too much in many ways, and Löw's problem is always who to drop. And so when you think about the decision rationally, it kind of makes sense, because Löw feels that Julian Draxler, after being captain at the Confederations Cup and having performed very well for Germany, is now indispensable. Thomas Müller and Marco Reus are naturally indispensable because they're experienced and high-quality players. Leon Goretzka is another midfielder, attacking midfielder, who played very well at the Confederations Cup and has played very well for Germany. Now, that leaves one more slot, really, and that's Antor Sané. And both of those are young, exciting flair players. Both of those wouldn't be in the first 11 because the other players have enjoyed so much more respect from them. And that means that he was picking a player for the bench. Now, in that sense, Brandt is probably the better choice simply because he can play in more positions than Sané can, even if he's, on talent alone, not a stronger player. On the other hand, it's very, very strange to think that Leroy Sané, after the season he's had at City and the sort of player he is, won't be there. And I think it is the question that will define Germany's World Cup, because, you know, if they go on to defend the title, become the first team to do that in 50 years, then Löw will be seen as a pragmatic genius. And if they miss a player of great creativity, then he'll be seen as a philistine for not picking the fantastic domain.
That's right. Now, you mentioned Marco Reus earlier. Now, I know Löw is a big fan of his, saying he's skillful and intelligent. Now, the Dortmund forward missed the 2014 World Cup and Euro 2016. So, how has the German media taken his inclusion?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are very, very happy for him because, as you say, that was two big tournaments that he missed. I can't remember whether he was in the squad for Euro 2012, but I might have even missed that as well. It's off my head, a strange member. But he's certainly a player who has been among Germany's best talents in, as I say, a very competitive field in that respect. And has never really had the chance to properly shine at his peak in a major tournament. And there's a feeling, I mean, he was injured for quite a lot of the last few years, but certainly he reinvigorated Borussia Dortmund when he came back to fitness this season. And there's a feeling that he is now at a point where he is able to lead a team, by example, as well as being the creative and devastating player on the counter-attack on the break that he always has been. And I think, given that I think twice got injured so close to the start of the tournament and had to miss out, there's a lot of people are very, very happy for him that he's finally getting into
it. Is there a concern that, you know, he may get an injury while he's on international duty? Because a lot of people say that his ankles are made out of glass.
Yeah, Yeah, and I think he's not the only one in that squad where there's a concern. I mean, Jerome Boateng is supposed to be going to be fit as a fiddle, but I think that's to be taken with a degree of scepticism. There's been a huge debate about Manuel Neuer. Germany's strength, though, is that exactly that strength in depth and the fact that they have so much quality in pretty much all positions. It's only really the left back position where you feel, you know, they're actually weak and don't have the same kind of quality. Although that's a slightly unfair judgment of Johannes Heitor. But you know, they have those players, and that's where him picking Brandt over Zané is probably again a slightly is linked to that in the prospects of injuries, because Zané would be a like for Royce, he'd be brilliant, but if it's Müller or if it's Draxler or if it's Goretzka who gets injured or Özil, then, you know, is Zané the place to replace Özil or Thomas Müller? Probably not, whereas Julian Brandt is probably a bit more of a joker that you can use in all situations.
Mm. Well, we'll talk about Manuel Neuer, because I need to know, is he fully fit? And if he isn't, is an 80 or 90% fit Neuer better than Ter Stegen and Kevin Trapp?
Yeah, well, Löw said that he would only pick Neuer for the final squad if they felt he was 100% fit. So, I mean, there's a lot of speculation that he would pick him anyway, put Ter Stegen as number one and have Neuer there just in the squad for the sake of experience and just as a kind of presence and a leader. But I think Löw felt that you can't ask a goalkeeper of Manuel Neuer's calibre to sit on the bench and watch. Either he's fit or he isn't, and if he's fit, then he's the number one. And you can understand that, and Germany have a history as well of having made a similar decision. Jürgen Klinsmann did it in 2006 with Oliver Kahn, picked Jens Lehmann ahead of him, and that spat overshadowed what was otherwise a very successful World Cup. I personally am very sceptical about the idea of picking a goalkeeper who hasn't played for effectively an entire season and would be making his competitive comeback in the first game of the World Cup over a goalkeeper who has played one of the best seasons in his career for Barcelona. I think Manuel Neuer is on paper a better goalkeeper than Marc-André Ter Stegen, but I think right now they are pretty even, and I would personally plump for the guy who's been playing all season. But I mean, I'm not the manager of Germany, and yeah. I think Löw obviously believes that Neuer's 100% fit, and given that he is, there's no way he can do that.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Absolutely. Well, when I think of great German strikers, the names Miroslav Klose, Jürgen Klinsmann, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, Gerd Müller, and many more spring to mind. Now look at this national team squad, and with the exception of Mauro Gomez, I can't really see a goal machine. Is that a bit of a concern?
I mean, it was at the last tournament, and a little bit at the 2014 World Cup. I mean, they've had to revert to a slightly more kind of pragmatic approach halfway through that tournament, and play Klose a bit more prominently because he tried to play with a sort of without a striker effectively, or with five strikers depending on how you see it, and it didn't quite work in the way he wanted it to. I would say he's refined the team in that respect and has got them playing more comfortably in that way without a striker. But he also has options there. Timo Werner has effectively risen up at RB Leipzig as the kind of heir to the throne of great German number nines, and at his best is a very, very effective and dangerous goal scorer, particularly teams that press high and play on the break. And Löw's team can do that, and if they're not going to do that, if they need a target man or a battering ram, they've got Gomez. And I think Löw, in the ideal situation, would like to play with sort of five creative players up front and none of them as an out-and-out striker. But he has those three options effectively available to him. And I think it's probably the first time, actually, in the last 4 or 5 years that he's had that much flexibility in attack. In 2014, Klose was kind of the only plan B. In the end, it was enough, but it was the only option if plan A didn't work. And at Euro 2016, that was very much a team in transition, whereas now I feel it's a more rounded team in attack, and he has those options. He has a nifty little goal scorer, and he has a big sort of battering number nine, old fashioned number nine in Gomez, and then he has that wealth of talent in his attacking midfield behind him.
Mm, that's right. I know Gomez is a very reliable striker. He's done very well this season at Stuttgart, hasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a surprise move back to his home club. last season, which not many people saw coming, and a few people were a bit sceptical about. But then he very much proved them wrong by banging in the goals and firing Stuttgart from around the relegation battle, at least on the edges of the relegation battle, up to even getting a European spot. They would have got a European spot had it not been winning the cup.
Absolutely. Well, mate, I've mentioned some great strikers. Let me talk about an all-time great captain, Philip Lahm. He retired last May. Do you think Joshua Kimmich has got what it takes to cement that right-back position for the national team? Because he's done exceptionally well at club level, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's done exceptionally well at international level as well. I think both at Bayern and in the Germany setup, he absolutely has cemented his role as that. I mean, he's very keen to kind of lay down the Philip Lahm comparisons. And I think to a certain extent, he's a slightly more... a slightly tougher player and a slightly less cerebral player than Lahm is, or Lahm was. But he may develop into something different as his career goes on. But I mean, in terms of his ability to go forward, his intelligence, his passing ability, in all those things, he looks very much like Lahm. And the fact that he stepped into his shoes in both teams only reinforces that impression. The one problem with him, I guess, would be that, and it's probably Germany's only weakness, is that because he likes to go forward so much, that does leave a gap on the wing. And if Jonas Hector is having a bad day, then there's also a slight weakness in the left back position. I think Germany are probably slightly vulnerable out wide for that reason. But I think Joshua Kimmich is I think everybody sees and everybody accepts now that he's already established as one of the top players in the German setup, and will only become more and more important both for Germany and Bayern.
You know what, I'm glad you mentioned left-backs, because that's a lovely segue to my next question. Now, I'm going to be showing my age here, mate, but I remember watching the great Andreas Bremer at left-back, especially at Inter Milan. You know, watching old videos back in the day, VHS, that shows you how old I am. This is a defender who was somewhat of a dead ball expert. Does Marvin Plattenhardt have what it takes to emulate the former Inter Milan defender?
I mean, as a Berliner, I would, although I'm not a Hertha fan, as a Berliner, I would love to say that Marvin Plattenhardt will be the kind of surprise package of this World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you know, as you say, as a dead ball specialist, he has got a marvellous free kick on him. And I think he's the sort of player that might pop up in a substitute role at some point and have one moment that he'll remember forever and helps Germany through to the next round. But I mean, if we're realistic, he's not an Andy Bremer. He's an effective and hard-working mid-table Bundesliga player who is currently enjoying probably the two or three most successful years of his career. And as I say, I mean, I'm very, very happy for him. And I think there should always be that kind of player in a squad. I think he'll probably be a grounding influence to a certain extent as well for some of them. Just to have that name around them. I think Jonas Hector will be the first choice left back, and as I say, I do think he can be slightly underrated, but at the same time, judging on the performances in both pre-tournament friendlies, he's one of the weaker players in that scene. I mean, that's always relative. It's a bit like saying it's always a relative thing to say the weakest player for Germany, because the size on paper is so strong.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know, it's funny though, because you do hear a lot of people associating the greatest German teams with a solid spine, those central defence, central midfield up front, but the fullbacks rarely get a mention, even though they're the most swashbuckling and possibly the most creative.
Yeah, I suppose what Löw has done to Germany is that, if you were to sum it up in one sentence, it's that he's retained all that... that old efficiency and that kind of that core of hard-working winning power, as it were, but added a certain flair and a certain flexibility in attack and a certain aesthetic quality to the team, and done so over a few generations. And I think the fullbacks, certainly with Kimmich and Lahm, one could say so, were a big part of that. We'll see whether or not that my prediction comes true, and that is the weakest area. I think Germany's great weapon in terms of flair and attacking quality is in that sort of front three, whoever makes it up, whether it's Müller, Draxler, Özil, or Weiss or Kaletsko, whoever it is, that's where the real quality lies, and that's where they'll
win games. So do you see the likes of Draxler, Brandt, or even Goretzka having a major impact in this competition?
I think it'll be interesting to see how much Draxler plays, just because I feel that he's a player that he's sort of almost the opposite of Zane, in that everybody wanted Zane to be there, and Zane was expected to be the kind of player, the rising star of this World Cup for Germany, and then he wasn't picked. Draxler, on the other hand, has sort of had a bit of a turbulent time in his early 20s and gone from pillar to post and has struggled, has been in and out of the Paris Saint-Germain team. But he's, you know, Löw rates him because he's done a good job for Germany, and I think that'll be interesting to see how much he plays first of all, and secondly, how well he does. I think Bant will be a substitute or reserve, and will only really play a significant role if somebody gets injured. And Özil, I think the big interesting thing is to see whether Özil or Draxler is favoured. Where Goretzka fits in, Goretzka can play either as a kind of number 10 or deeper. So he may play alongside Toni Kroos in the sort of number 8 position if Sami Khedira isn't fit, for example. But I mean, all of this just shows that how much depth and how much flexibility Löw has in that midfield. And again, to say goodbye to Zane, I think that's probably one of the factors that led to him being dropped, is the fact that Löw sees him as a little bit more inflexible than most of the other players.
Tell me about Mesut Özil, because in the UK he's, you know, criticised for being, you know, sluggish, looks disinterested sometimes, but his assists are there. What do the Germans make of Mesut Özil? Do they see the same as what the Brits do?
I think there's a little bit less of the idea that he's sluggish and that he disappears in games. I think the Germans rate him a little bit more highly and see him as a kind of more elegant tactical player in many ways. But there have been times where there's a certain frustration with him and particularly with his body language and his apparent commitment to the cause. There's the big debate right now is about this meeting that he and Ilkay Gundogan had with Recep Tayyip Erdogan, the Turkish president, and that was a huge political storm in Germany. And I think, whereas before criticisms of Özil's commitment have been kind of a side note and something that may occasionally pop up in a post-match analysis, if that kind of issue raises its head again in the context of what's happened before this World Cup with that meeting with Erdogan, it will be big and it will be really, really a hot topic of discussion in Germany, because this question mark that has been raised about how much commitment they have to the country and the team in certain quarters. I mean, a lot of people find that debate slightly exaggeration, a bit vulgar, to be honest, in Germany, but it has been present in the media and it will rise its head again if that perception of Özil comes up.
Fantastic, mate. Well, look, on a final note, I've got a two-part question. First of all, do you think Germany will retain the title? And secondly, can you see Jogi Löw leading them out at Euro 2020?
Well, I mean, I'll answer the second one first. I mean, Löw has just extended his contract again. He's also said quite recently that he will want to do other things and he won't want to retire as Germany manager, as it were. So I think he's keeping his options open. I wouldn't say that he would leave before Euro 2020, because I think he wouldn't have extended the contract before this World Cup had that been the case. I think he's planning for Euro 2020, so I think it's fair to say that's a likelihood. As for whether they can defend the title, I mean, nobody's done it since Brazil in 1962, and football was a very different game then.
Absolutely fantastic. Well, Kit, thank you ever so much for your time, mate. Really appreciate it. Before I let you go, can you just tell our listeners your Twitter handle and possibly how they can get in contact with you through social media?
Yeah, so my Twitter handle is at Kit Holden, and that's all my presence on social media. Thanks, so, yeah, do go and follow me if you wish.
Fantastic. Well, guys, that was a great Kit Holden. Hope to have you back on the show sometime soon, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Those of you still listening, you can give us a follow on Twitter at Shoot the Defence, and we also have a Facebook group page. So until next time, take care.